All right, welcome in. Monday edition of Good Morning Hockey. I'm your host, Tassos Kyrkos. What a great start to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Home teams are 6-0 so far. Four more games tonight, two game twos, and the two remaining game ones on tap tonight. Dallas taking on the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Edmonton Oilers hosting the Los Angeles Kings. All game ones in these series so far. There's kind of a feeling out process to a game one. Some take a bit more than others. Some take the first 20 minutes, some take the entire 60 minutes, and then some for these teams to sort of get a gauge on how the rest of these series are going to go. Just about all these games have been fantastic so far. Really incredible fan bases, really great atmospheres in a lot of these buildings. The even outside these buildings too, they've really just been tremendous so far. So we'll break down the games that happened already. We'll break down these series, what we know, what we think about what has gone on so far, and also give you a little bit of a preview for tonight's action. But I wanted to start with the New York Rangers and the Washington Capitals. Matt Rempe opens the scoring. We're going to get to him in a moment here because I'm loving this kid more and more. I didn't understand the hype fully, and I'm starting to get it more as we kick off the playoffs here. But he gets the goal. Alexander Ovechkin is held to zero shots. And the New York Rangers take a 1-0 series lead with the 4-1 win over the Capitals. That game was the first 20 minutes, definitely that feeling out process that I mentioned. Both teams you could sense were just sort of wading into the water of the playoffs. And then in a flash, before you knew it, it was 2-0 New York Rangers, and they had full control of the hockey game. And it didn't really seem like it was going to be much of an opportunity for Washington to get back into it. I know they got the goal to make it 3-1 from Marty Farivari, but it was never really in doubt at that point after the Rangers made it 3-0 off the Jimmy Vesey goal that they were going to walk away victorious in that one. Really tough start for the Capitals. Couple bounces here and there off the goals that just bang plays that make it, you know, a quick 0-0 game to before you know it, it is 3-0. The Rempe goal is one thing, him just standing in front of the net. The Panarin goal, obviously, a good play by Alexi Lafreniere, could have been called a penalty. We are deciding and still figuring out how these referees are going to call these series. Obviously, after game one, each of the teams go to the series officials and they talk about it, you know, what they liked, what they didn't like out of the calls and how the game was officiated. So certainly some teams are going to have some opinions to voice about how some of these games are called. But Panarin scores to make it 2-0. Great shot, great pass. Great play on the turnover by Lafreniere as well. But Matt Rempe, a lot of people were wondering if he would even be in a playoff lineup for the New York Rangers. He then comes out and says post-game that he feels like he is built for the playoffs. And what I really enjoy about this guy is just I love how genuinely he loves all of this. The experience, his teammates playing at Madison Square Garden, the interactions that he has with the fans, the way that the fans have latched onto him, he loves it. And he has a genuine appreciation for it, which sometimes you can't always garner from a hockey player. Sometimes you do, but oftentimes you don't. Hockey players normally, as we know, they stick to the cliches. And can we get the Matt Rempe quote talking about the crowd?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's the feeling when the crowd is singing your name?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like I said before, I love them. I don't want to let them down. I want to play my hardest every single game for them, and it's pretty cool. Today was the first game my mom was at the Garden ever, so it was really special because she got to hear the chants and get a goal and stuff, so it was really special for her to be there, and yeah, so it's a really special night.
Do you feel like you had some juice because of that, knowing that your mom's in the building?
I always got some juice, but no, she, obviously, like, I love her so much. She's my biggest fan, and we went out for dinner last night and walked around, and she'd never really been to New York, so we were just walking around, and it was definitely cool. Like, I bet she was pretty emotional today, so it's real cool. Yeah, she's the best.
Yeah, I mean, like, Raven was watching it. I already watched that, but can't you just, like, feel the
energy and appreciation,
the genuineness radiating off that kid? You know what I mean? Like, this is a 21-year-old Probably really did not even expect to be here at this moment in this period of time right now, playing for the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden in the Stanley Cup playoffs, game one. You got your mom there, obviously, in town, too. First game that she's gotten to watch you play in the NHL. Yeah, can't you just, like, feel it, though, from that guy? Like, super authentic, really, from him. So that's fun to watch. That's a cool piece to this. And, you know, he gets a goal, too. You know, he opens the scoring for the Rangers in the playoffs. That is a very important tone setter. It is not just the bodies being lame, but it is being able to show you can play, too. Around the net, that's where a lot of playoff goals are scored. So Rangers get a big win and they go up on the Caps 1-0. The earlier game yesterday was Tampa Bay in Florida. And this series, if one thing we can tell from game one is one, this is going to be a very close series. And two, it looks like this is definitely going to be the most physical series out of all of them. There were stretches of this game where it did not look like anybody was really interested in putting up shots or really taking it to the net. I know it was a lot of good defense on both sides too, working to limit chances of both sides. But I think Florida is going to be a problem. I really think Florida is going to be a problem here. They look like Tampa Bay did 2 years ago or 3 years ago now. And it must be interesting for John Cooper and his squad looking at the other end of the ice and almost seeing a younger version of yourself. That seems to be what we've got in this matchup. Just a younger Tampa Bay Lightning team repping the Florida Panthers. We were talking about crowds earlier. I have a really strong appreciation and love for the Florida Panthers and their crowd, their fan base, the energy for hockey in South Florida. It's done nothing but grow since the Panthers have really shown this drive to become that team, and they have, and these fans are showing out and they are loud and they're into the game and they are becoming more and more knowledgeable as they are experiencing these types of games and these series and these scenarios, with an elite team. And, obviously it was a 3-1 game before Tampa Bay got the late goal by Steven Stamkos to make it 3-2 with about 8 seconds left. But that would be the final score. Florida goes up 1-0. The empty netter by Matthew Tkachuk ends up standing as the game winner. Sergei Bobrovsky was really, really good. He didn't need to be tested a whole heck of a lot, but when he did, he was sharp. You know, Vasilevsky was very good for Tampa Bay, but this is going to be a series. This is probably one that this and then Winnipeg, Colorado are definitely going to be the two series that I keep my eyes on the most. And look, I think these two teams are very evenly matched. Florida may just be one step quicker than the Lightning, but that doesn't mean that Tampa Bay is not going to give it everything they have, empty out the tank. And look, if Tampa Bay does bow out in the first round, you know that they are going to give every ounce of what they have in order to try and get past their in-state rivals. So I mean, that was a great game. I really love it. You know, it's really key for Florida to have Carter Verhaeghe back. Gets a big goal for them yesterday. Him back in the lineup will do them wonders. And, you know, Tampa is doing everything they can. They are going to play hard. You know that even though this may be a matchup of a younger version of themselves, that they don't view it that way. That is more how the rest of us are here to dissect this. But they definitely feel like they're in this and that they have every opportunity to beat Florida. So they're going to give it their all. And I think they're going to try and do a good job of it. I don't know that they end up knocking off the Panthers, but I think that they will be able to push this to 6 or 7. So that was just a great game. I really enjoyed that. The fans, the budding rivalry between the two. I mean, that's how you get true rivalries in sports, is playoff matchups. And obviously these two teams have played once before in the playoffs in the second round sweep by the Lightning a few years ago. But this is different. This is opening round. One team is going to leave this series very unhappy with how their season ended up going, bowing out in the first round. So, you know, it's going to be a great rest of the way. Next game is on Tuesday between those two. We will get game two with them. So we look forward to that one. But arguably the most entertaining game of the night was the one that featured 6 goals in the first period, 13 in total. That was Winnipeg and Colorado. Winnipeg holds off the Avalanche 7-6. You know, with all the talk of all these great series, and they're all great in their own way. This one might turn out to be the best series of them all. Lots of different stats about how many goals there were. Combined for 13 goals. Only 2 other game ones in an opening round series have featured 13 plus goals. That was a 1982 matchup between tonight's opponents, Edmonton and LA, and a 1985 semifinal game between Chicago and Detroit. It was a very entertaining game, very back and forth. Winnipeg ended up pulling away with it. And, if you're the Avalanche, obviously you're having a discussion about your net minding. No Eustace Annunen available to them, so they stuck with Alexander Georgiev, as they were not really planning on putting in Arvid Holm into the game to get his first taste of NHL action in a blowout to the Winnipeg Jets in the first game of the playoffs. But, you know, you're talking about crowds. I don't know that there was a better one than the whiteout in Winnipeg, both inside and outside the arena. It was incredible. Really fun game to watch. Not a lot of goaltending. And at times it felt like they were searching for structure. They were trying to get there, and it almost felt like at times that they were on the precipice of getting to structured, detailed hockey, and then we'd kind of get back to the riverboat gambling style of hockey. So this is gonna be a great series. I know that we've talked a lot about tone setters. This one felt more of just like Winnipeg saying, we are here, and we're not going to go out as easily as a lot of people think we are. In fact, we are, in a lot of people's eyes, the favorite in this series. So fun stat about the goals here. So twice, 2 different periods of hockey in that game featured 6 goals. Jets and Avalanche produced the second playoff game in NHL history where 2 teams combined for 6-plus goals in multiple periods. The other one was Game 1 of the 1982 Division Semifinals between LA and Edmonton. So, this is, maybe we don't see every game like this, although I would not be surprised if we see another very high-scoring affair. Maybe not 7-6, but maybe a 6-5, 5-4 kind of game. I would not preclude that from happening again in this series. The one thing that might end up swinging in Winnipeg's favor is the depth that they have. Obviously, no Jonathan Drouin for the whole series for the Avalanche. That is a tough blow. And, they might look to that as a big reason why they were unable to complete a miraculous comeback. That's a guy who had 56 points in 79 games this year as a real contributor next to Nathan MacKinnon, allowed them to spread the offense around even just that much more. And they certainly missed him, although I know they got 6 goals on the board. They probably would have loved to have him. A large part of this series, for me, is not really the correction of Alexander Georgiev. It's been a very tough season for Alexander Georgiev, and I don't know to what extent he will be able to put it back on the rails here. But for the goalie at the other end of the ice, Connor Hellebuck, he is, in a lot of people's mind, the runaway favorite for the Vezina Trophy this year. In a lot of people's eyes, should be getting consideration for the Hart Trophy as MVP as well. If he is able to hold Colorado to 1 goal or fewer in a couple of these games here, Winnipeg might really take care of the Colorado Avalanche here. That's just what I'm looking at so far. They're going to have the same kind of juice behind them in game 2 as they had in game 1. And that matters, folks. That having that real tangible amount of energy and passion behind you, at times it can be a double-edged sword almost, because, when Winnipeg was up 1-0 and then they quickly go down 2-1, that building was quiet, very, very quiet. And, it's a tough thing to deal with when you are in a building like that, that has the juice and has the energy, but they are also very educated hockey fans. So they know that every goal in the playoffs can be a death knell. And, You know, that's the way it goes here. So we will see how that series goes. Game two for that one is tomorrow. And, you know, I'm sure the Winnipeg faithful will be just as loud as they were yesterday. Whiteout was great, man. Like, that was awesome. Late game last night, Vancouver Canucks taking down the Nashville Predators 4-2. Dakota Joshua with the game-winning goal in that one. He adds another one late. Quinn Hughes ties it up, although they ended up giving that goal to Pia Suter. You know, great game by the Canucks. Really cardiac Canucks style. 2 goals in 12 seconds. New franchise record for the postseason, that is. And, you know, the atmosphere is being very important. Obviously, Vancouver, they haven't experienced playoff hockey in a very long time that wasn't in the COVID bubble. And they're enjoying it. They're going to really, really enjoy this the whole time. Yeah, I'm just trying to find when the other previous mark for fast 2 goals in a playoff game was game six of the 1989 division semifinals. That was 2 goals in 15 seconds. So this one does it. Dakota Joshua becomes the fourth Canucks player in history to score 3+ points in his playoff debut. The others, Jeff Courtnell, Cliff Ronning, and Brian Bradley, all the way back in 1989. So really impressive performance by him. This is a team that, if they are clicking, are going to catch a lot of people by surprise. Everybody knows they are that good, but I think a lot of people are in the camp of you got to take your lumps before you really truly are a Stanley Cup contender and are able to make it 2, 3 rounds, 4 rounds into the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Canucks are here to show that that is all nonsense and anybody has a chance as long as you put it all together at the right time. So Vancouver goes up 1-0. That's a tough loss for Nashville too. You play a really good game for most of it. You're up 2-1 in the third period. You'd like to think that you could pick up a win on the road and shock the world and, you know, be feeling good heading into game two with the chance to go up 2-0 on the road. But alas, the game gets away from them. Roman Josi now passes Ryan Ellison, Ryan Johansson with his 32nd postseason assist for the most in Predators history. So obviously that's just a guy that's going to continue to pile up those kinds of stats, though, as the unquestioned leader of that team. You know, really like the effort from the Canucks, really complete game overall. So we will see how that one goes going forward. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was much of the same of that game two tomorrow for Vancouver and Nashville. Going to Saturday's games now, we only had two. And in such a great day for hockey yesterday, you wouldn't be faulted if you walked away from Saturday wanting maybe a little bit more out of the two games we got. First one was Carolina against the New York Islanders. Carolina Hurricanes walk away with a 3-1 win in that one. You know, the Islanders played a really good game. They made this surprise, although maybe shouldn't have been a surprise decision to start Semyon Varlamov in game one. He was very good for them. Freddie Anderson was excellent on the other end of the ice. You know, I don't know what else the Islanders need to do in order to win that game other than maybe cut to the net a little bit more, really try and create a bit more havoc in front of a guy like Freddie Anderson, who is always going to be very good when he can see the shot coming his way. Not a lot of net front disruption for the New York Islanders, and that is something I'm almost certain Patrick Waugh will be preaching going into game two tonight. But that was a great game overall. Carolina is very, very stifling. They suffocate the life out of you. They score in opportune moments. They bury their chances when they get them. You know, Kuznetsov early, Stefan Nason later on in the game, bear down on a chance and really wasn't going to make any mistake on that one. You know, Marty Nate just put that one away. But this is going to be a series that the New York Islanders might do everything in their power to play very good hockey and try to foil the Carolina Hurricanes, but they might just not have the guns, offensively speaking, in order to put enough pucks over the goal line. I would be surprised if Semyon Varlamov did not start the game today for the New York Islanders. I assume he will, and same goes for Freddie Anderson too. I would not be surprised if they try and squeak Peter Kochetkov in there at some point during this series. But I don't think it will be tonight. This is an interesting conversation, obviously, as we're gonna move over to our last series that has started before moving to the two that haven't, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins, and the question of who plays in goal for notably the Boston Bruins, although the question is starting to arise for the Maple Leafs as well. You know, Jeremy Swayman was excellent on Saturday, and, you know, maybe we'll make this full transition here, but... I asked this for a larger question, and I think about it with Peter Kochetkov, because Carolina has done the two-goalie thing all year. Obviously, Freddie Anderson missed a majority of the playoffs, and he has his injury concerns. Might you know, Boston has done this goalie rotation thing the entire season, and no goaltenders have really started consecutive games for the Bruins, but Jeremy Swayman was so good on Saturday that it's going to be very tough for Jim Montgomery to not go back to him tonight. That being said, a large part in the Bruins' downfall last season was the fact that they stuck with Jeremy Swayman through the first six games and then threw in Jeremy Swayman for game seven against Florida, and it was too little too late for the spark via the other goaltender. My thought here, and this seems to be a thought widely held around hockey media, is that Jeremy Swayman will in fact start tonight. But if you are looking to get Linus Ullmark into the series, that game three would be a very good opportunity back in Toronto. If you are Carolina and you start Freddie Anderson today, win or lose, do you think about going to Peter Kochetkov in game three? You know, Peter Kochetkov, it does have his moments where he gets very wrapped up. He's a very emotional player, is a very passionate player. Those are all good qualities to have. But you know that UBS Arena in New York is going to be a very packed barn for game three. And maybe that's not the environment that you want him in a potential situation where he could get rattled. But I think at some point you have to look to try and work him in and give Freddie Anderson a day off, and also just make sure that you can win with either of your goaltenders in net if you are Carolina. But the Islanders played a great game. If they continue to do that, there may be a couple games here and there where they are able to put two, three, maybe even four over the goal line, but I think they're going to be hard-pressed to do so, and this looks like this one's really going to go Carolina's way. But we'll see tonight. Tonight could paint an entirely different picture of how this series looks the rest of the way, especially if the Islanders pick up a big win on the road to make this a 1-1 split going back to New York. So now the last series, of which we have a game played, that was the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. Bruins scoring their first shot at the game, first playoff game and goal for John Beecher. Nice to see for him. Former first-round pick took the long way to the National Hockey League, but... Boston really just suffocated Toronto. They forced the Leafs into playing their style. You could see what Toronto was doing. Some of their guys more focused on the antics of the game than maybe the score line, especially at a certain point. Max Domi certainly trying to set the tone for the Buds. But Boston, they hold true. They get timely saves from Jeremy Swayman that allow them to settle into the game, and they almost crescendo into the hockey game. And I know a 2-0 goal really shouldn't feel like that is the death knell for a team, but once Boston went up 2-0, didn't you think that that game was over just a little bit? You know, the Leafs get one back late. You know, tough game for Ilya Samsonov on the other end of the ice. It is projected that he will go again tonight as we get game two at TD Garden between these two squads. But Boston, they look good. This is going to be a really tough challenge. Swayman is a problem for Toronto. Some of these players, Pat Maroon looked really good in his Bruins playoff debut. It was very, very effective on the fourth line for them. And, you know, Jake DeBrusk is a Toronto Maple Leafs killer. That is in his DNA, whether he has a good season or a tough season. You know, you could tell this was definitely a tougher season for Jake DeBrusk, but... what we have said about the Stanley Cup playoffs is that once they roll around, it does not matter what kind of season that you had. You can write it all anew in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And if you have a good playoffs, not a single person will recall the maybe not so great regular season that you had. But Jake DeBrusk was incredibly impressive. So was Charlie Coyle, too, really giving the Bruins a true shutdown center that they have a growing trust in. Obviously, the story for the Maple Leafs, no William Nylander, no Bobby McMahon in that one. William Nylander obviously has not missed a game in 8 years. So a lot of questions surrounding that and a coy Sheldon Keefe about his status for tonight's game two. Although it might look like we get him back in the lineup, that is still yet to be determined. And also the question, if we're talking goaltenders, will we see Joe Wall at some point in this series? And if we do, when might that be? And what does that do to the psyche of Ilya Samsonov? Can you turn back to a goaltender after you pull him more so because of performance reasons than, let's say, a Boston scenario where you are swapping from Swayman to Ullmark because you know they're both excellent? Game two of that one goes tonight. We will see if Boston goes up 2-0 or if the Maple Leafs are able to head home with a 1-1 split. Now let's get to the series. Actually, you know what? Before we get to the series that are kicking off tonight, Vegas and Dallas and LA versus Edmonton, I did want to just run through some other stuff. We have some Utah news, some news from some teams that have missed the playoffs already that are on the outside looking in, and also the PWHL. And maybe I'll just start there. The PWHL game on Saturday between, also just great job scheduling. The PWHL has done a good job in a tough season, I have to admit, of just getting the scheduling right. Putting games at the most opportune time when they know that they can get as many eyes as possible on their games. So really nice scheduling job by the PWHL, especially on Saturday. That was really nice to enjoy the Toronto-Montreal game. Sarah Nurse ends it in overtime. PWHL Toronto becomes the first team to clinch a spot in the inaugural playoffs. 21,105 recorded at the Bell Center on Saturday. That is a new record. It feels like that is the fifth time this season already that we have set a new record for women's hockey attendance. But that one was great. The ovation for Marie-Philippe Poulin was unlike really anything I've really seen in hockey. The even just the celebration after the goals. Montreal got one late in the first period to tie the game. They got one late in the second period to tie the game. The energy in that fan base in the seats was electric. I mean, it was like a crowd full of Matt Rempe's. It was really, really good. People were lively. We know the issue with a lot of places where it is expensive to watch a hockey game is that a lot of them are snapped up by corporate entities and they make it for a very quiet presence in the arena on some nights in NHL arenas. So this was not that. This was young kids and young fans and people who were really, really excited about being in the stands for history and for a really good hockey game, I might add. And they showed it. They showed the passion. If you haven't seen it, just go look up clips of it on YouTube. It is definitely worth the watch. It was very, very cool to see. Ottawa takes down Minnesota 4-0 in the other game to keep them alive here. So just some other news, bits of news, a couple players signing, a couple guys leaving the University of Denver. We've already seen Shea Bouillon and Massimo Rizzo already leave David Carl's team at Denver as two-time national champions, actually, I might add. Pittsburgh Penguins also announcing they signed Tristan Broz to a three-year entry-level deal. He's a 21-year-old. They drafted 58th overall in 2021. He was excellent for Denver for the Pioneers this season, 40 points through 43 games. That is a good one for the Penguins. And then Sean Behrens also signing his entry-level contract with the Colorado Avalanche as if they needed to get more loaded on defense. That is a very, very good prospect. If you do not know the name Sean Behrens, you will get to know it soon, as he will be a very good piece for the Avalanche, probably maybe as soon as next season. They could look to slide him in there to a very good defense, obviously, that already includes Makar and Taze and all of these guys, Gerard, and the list goes on with the Colorado defense. But so a couple signings there. We're on San Jose watch. I've heard a little bit of the talk about the coaching staff there and what happens there. My anticipation is that the coaching staff in San Jose will remain the same. I can't really understand what other type of job they were supposed to do. Looked like David Quinn really did as good of a job as he could as far as making that team competitive and engaged. This is from Shang Peng. The San Jose Sharks are letting Kevin LeBanc, Mike Hoffman, and Alexander Barabanov go to free agency this season. We also got an official announcement that Connor Bedard will be representing Canada at the Men's World Ice Hockey Championships in Czechia. And this is from Ben Pope, but the press conference of Kyle Davidson after the season ended at the locker room cleanout day. And this is a quote from him. The Blackhawks are ready to begin next season ascending to avoid finishing at the bottom of the league. Talking about Kyle Davidson mentioned how his team went from 30th to 31st season over season. So there was no improvement, but instead a spot dropped in the overall league rankings, and that he is tired of that. I don't know if that means we can expect playoffs here in Chicago or what that would look like. First of all, Raven, I know you probably haven't caught a lot of the Stanley Cup playoffs so far, and that much is understood. But have you seen some of these crowds outside of the arenas that exist?
I have not, but I'm going to throw it back to like how the NBA. I remember during 2021 when the Bucks won, like they had the Deer District out there.
Yeah. This is kind of like the same thing, you know, but this is like lots of fans. And when you do it, you know, when you do it in a city like Toronto or Winnipeg, like the crowd in Winnipeg was unbelievable yesterday. Just truly, truly unbelievable. Not only was it a whiteout inside the arena, but outside the arena. It was really just fun to see. Look up the Winnipeg crowd yesterday. But while I ask you this, and it's not so much a question for you, is it just you know, something to ponder? And this is for all of our locals here tuning in right now. It has been a long time since Chicago has hosted a playoff game. Obviously, I was not around when the Blackhawks were really competitive. I was not living in the city quite yet, but I wonder truly, and I know that this fan base here is really gearing up for when this team is competitive. They are chomping at the bit for this team to be very good again. But if and when the Chicago Blackhawks make the playoffs, if that is next season, which I don't think it will, but if it is the season after, which I truly believe will be around the time that the Blackhawks make a serious push for the playoffs, do we get something like this outside the United Center? I think we should, but...
I think we should. I think more so it's going to be like the downtown area people are going to be.
No, I'm talking like watch party though. Like watching outside. The game. Okay, yeah, okay. Outside the arena. Mm-hmm. Are you going to get, because you probably could if you you know, a lot of these markets, it's free to go stand outside there, but you just have to
get there.
You have to get there. You have to get tickets. And they sell out, depending on the market, they sell out very quickly. And then you have to get there like hours before the game begins. And, you know, then you're kind of waiting out there watching. I think that would be excellent. I have asked around and I could not get a firm answer from a lot of my my Blackhawks faithful that I know here about what the protocol would be for something like that here come playoff time. But so that was a long drink of water to get to my point here. Of Kyle Davidson saying that the Hawks are ready to be competitive and that he is ready to start making the push for them, whatever that kind of looks like, whether that is trading maybe some of the extra draft capital that you have in future drafts, not this upcoming one, but, you know, 2025 and beyond, in order to get some current roster players, or whether that means dipping into the free agency pool. It looks like that is going to be a sign of good things to come for the Chicago Blackhawks. So a couple Utah updates. These are from different sources. So we've kind of heard this going around. This is from Greg Wyshynski. The Utah franchise may have a temporary name for their first season, so players and fans have something to call themselves. This is sort of a PWHL situation. Obviously, as we see here with all the teams just being called PWHL and then their city name, you know, some of the names that have gone around that have been trademarked, that have been leaked, you know, Utah Hockey Club, that sort of has a Washington football team ring to it.
God, I hate it, though, dude. Like, I understand the relation.
The other names are pretty bad, though, I have to admit.
They're not great, and that's where you kind of get the time where if they're... waiting a year, yeah, you can throw in Utah HC, Utah Hockey Club. That's fine. But, like, we...
That I don't was think you can go Utah HC.
But, like, that was how the...
Football team?
Yeah, that's how they were proposed. It was going to be a temporary thing. And if you look, like, overseas and, like, the Premier League and stuff, yeah, they have, you know, soccer clubs and in the part of the name. But that's way more historical and, like, heritage to that area, I would say, than, like, it is here in America, where we have always had, you know, names for the teams in a way.
No, I agree. I think you got a... So there's an ECHL team in Utah, mm-hmm. in Salt Lake City, and they're called the Grizzlies. I've heard this idea bandied around a little bit, although I'm surprised that there is not more of a calling for this. By the Utah ECHL club, name the NHL team the Grizzlies. That is my personal vote for this sort of thing.
I don't think you can in the Big Four with a team already named the Grizzlies.
There might be a way to work around it because you have some, you know, you got the Jets and the Jets, you know, you got the Winnipeg Jets and the New York Jets. You know, you got the Giants in both the NFL and the MLB. Mm-hmm. There's certainly instances of being able to do that. There might need to be a little bit of money exchanged or an agreement or just sort of an understanding. But, you know, there exists an ECHL team called the Utah Grizzlies. So,
Storm and Mormons.
The Storm and Mormons.
Remember that post I sent you?
No, there's been a lot of that. There's been a lot of that. You know, Yeti's been tossed around.
Bro, Yeti would be sick.
It would be. It would be. One, for me, if we're talking about similarities, where it could create an issue is with other hockey teams. Mm. That's why I would say you would have to purchase the Grizzlies in order to do something like that. You know, the Yeti, they might look at the Colorado Avalanche and almost say there's a bit too much similarity. I know that those are two different things, an Avalanche versus a Yeti, but, you know, you're crossing into fine line territory here with things that might be too similar with one another. But, you know, I like the Yeti. I think it's a bit, you know, I don't know how to say this, but not soft. It's a bit cheesy, almost.
I just looked up the state bird of Utah, and you're not going to believe this.
What is it?
It's the California gull.
The California gull is the state bird. I know Utah is like the beehive state. A lot of bees in Utah. So there's a couple bee names that could be cool if you really think about it. You know, but a big part of this too is deception, right? So all these trademark names that might have been registered may have just been to throw the scent off as far as what they're actually kind of going with. Keep in mind, Ryan Smith is a very, very intelligent businessman and sports franchise owner. So there's a lot that goes into a name.
The elk is the state animal, so that would be...
That would be cool.
That would honestly be a cool kind of tie-in to the name.
The elk I could get behind. You know, I love that. So, you know, there are different really creative things that you can go with. Although I am not opposed to them starting something that is temporary if in the hopes that eventually it becomes something that you've really, truly worked on, right? And that you really enjoy. It was also announced by Greg Wyshynski that all of the Utah games will be broadcast in Arizona as they hope to sort of retain some of the fan base that existed with the previous team. And also, it looks like this is from Ryan Smith, head coach Andre Tourigny and general manager Bill Armstrong will begin the 24-25 season with Utah. That is good to hear, as both of them have really done tremendous jobs to try and get what was formerly the Arizona Coyotes into being in a really good spot, where one, you know, I've heard the notion that if Arizona was not a young and up-and-coming team, that this deal between Alex Morello, the NHL, and Ryan Smith would look a lot different. If this was a team that was maybe just heading into a rebuild and not very competitive, that maybe Ryan Smith doesn't do this. But the fact that you have young players like Doan, Cooley, Genther, the list goes on. You have a lot of really exciting young talent in your pipeline too. The Morgan or the Connor Geekies and the Maverick Lemereau, Really good different players. Simashev, some of these guys, right, that are going to step into the NHL one day and be very good players. You have a lot of cap space this season. Ryan Smith is ready to own this team and spend as much as he can. We know the pejorative from him was, we are ready to make sure that these players feel like that no expense is too much for them. The days of cutting corners is over, really. So that is your Utah update. I'm sure we will have many more of those going forward. But Bill Armstrong and Andre Tourigny staying in their positions come next season, although that is good news. All right, so let's jump over to these two other games we have tonight. They are both game ones. First one is Vegas and Dallas. Looks like we might get Mark Stone in game one. Looks like we might get Alex Pietrangelo after being a full participant in practice Saturday after having an appendectomy. It looks like Vegas is going to be locked and loaded for game one with a full lineup. Then the question becomes, how quickly can Vegas establish chemistry and cohesiveness with a group that maybe really and definitely really has not played all together quite yet? There is certainly going to be some line juggling in this one, some figuring out by Bruce Cassidy which pieces fit in the right spot. And that might be where this series looks a little different. The two sides look a little different because Dallas is a team, I should say, that has had these pieces more or less. Other than calling up Logan Stankoven and trading for Chris Tanev at the deadline, they made all of their moves in the offseason, bringing in Matt Duchene, bringing in Craig Smith, bringing in Sam Steele. This is a team that is really, a lot of people consider it, myself included, the deepest team in the National Hockey League. And they are cohesive. They are what Vegas is and was and what Vegas hopes to be able to put together as quickly as tonight here. But it might just be a question of, does everything fit all together? Do all of these pieces fit appropriately in the puzzle, even if it's a jigsaw kind of puzzle and you got to push it together a little bit to get there? So that will be an interesting thing to see here. Does not look like we will get William Carrier tonight, although it looks like we might get Mantha and Chandler Stevenson back in the lineup after they each missed the finale. All of these players were cleared for contact when the Golden Knights practice on Sunday, but seems like there's going to be some game time decisions here. But look, this is probably going to be, obviously outside of that Winnipeg-Colorado series, the series where one good team is going home early, and there is no doubt about it. One of these teams is going to be very, very unhappy with the season. Dallas is definitely the locked and loaded Stanley Cup contender this year. And Vegas is the defending champs themselves. So you bandy around the question of who maybe has more pressure on them. You might look at it and say, well, Vegas won the Stanley Cup last year, so the pressure is off. But when you really think about it, you have a lot of players that are unrestricted free agents this season, some big decisions and important parts of your locker room, questions that are going to need answering come this summer, and you don't really want that summer to start in the next 2 weeks here. So you want to try and make a run at the Stanley Cup too while your window is wide open. For the Dallas Stars, your window is open now and it is going to be open for really as long as you're able to keep it open. You have so many young stars here that are really just entering that window of competitiveness for the Stanley Cup. The Robertsons, Haskinens, Wyatt Johnson, Jake Ottinger, etc. And including the best young core that is now currently graduating into the National Hockey League. So maybe there is a little bit of pressure on Dallas. You make the Tanev trade. This is your first season as a true Stanley Cup contender, although you've made it to the final against Tampa Bay where you lost, and you had largely the same team, give or take some of these young guys we've talked about. You did make it all the way to the Western Conference final last season where you lost to the same Vegas Golden Knights team. So losing to the same team in back-to-back playoffs is tough. You want to be able to show that you are growing and maturing and able to get over these humps and hurdles that you were previously unable to get over. So this should be a good one. Should be a very physical series, very competitive between the two. It doesn't look like any of these clubs are going to be in the business of backing down. So we await game one between that one tonight. And then speaking of losing to a team, two consecutive playoffs, you have the Edmonton Oilers facing off against the Los Angeles Kings. Third straight playoffs that these two teams will play in the first round. Edmonton winning the previous two matchups over the LA Kings. So now it is retribution time for Los Angeles. You know, two teams that have had their coaching swaps this season. You know, Jay Woodcroft out, Chris Knobloch in, Todd McClellan out, Jim Hiller in. Both to varying degrees of success. Obviously, Edmonton was way out of the playoffs when the coaching change was made, and they finished almost overtaking the Vancouver Canucks for top spot in the Pacific. And Los Angeles, they started off very well. They went through a midseason swoon that cost McClellan his job, and Hiller got them on the right track eventually, and they finished the season strong. My one thing about Edmonton this playoffs, and this will ring true for however long their playoff run lasts, is, and I was having this discussion with a friend of mine the other day, of how teams perform when you are the not just the odds-on favorite, because I don't know that a lot of people really consider Edmonton the odds-on favorite, but in Edmonton, it almost feels like there is an air around the organization, the city, this team, these players, that they have to win this year. I don't know that there is another team in the postseason this year that you look at them more than the Edmonton Oilers and say they have to get it done this year. And that is always an interesting proposition, right? When a team is, quote unquote, having to win, and when they have to win, how do you handle that pressure? How are you able to really shine through in those moments? And do you wilt, or do you really shine through? So that will be an interesting one. It was announced by Brian Rashog that Evander Kane played the entire 23-24 season with a sports hernia. Looks like he is going to play through it, although it is unknown what his status for game one is. He hopes to play in game one here. Missed the last two games of the regular season, and he skated with Sam Carrick and Matthias Janmark on the fourth line at practice on Sunday. So gets a little bit of time off, took a week off before the playoffs, see how he can feel. This is something that kind of flares up and down, you know, but it's something that even Kane himself says affects his skating, quickness, agility, quick twitch movements, a lot of which hockey is. Chris Knobloch said he expects Kane to play, though, but that he will manage his minutes. Also looks like we might get a Jean-Gabriel Pageau return in game two of the Carolina Hurricanes game, Carolina Hurricanes, New York Islanders game. He missed game one, still day-to-day according to Patrick Waugh, but there is a good chance for him to play today. So we will see. You know, looking around at some other things, looks like Mikhail Sergachev is skating again with the Tampa Bay Lightning, although it doesn't look like we will see him in round one versus Florida. Might make a return for round two or three if Tampa can get that far. And also Carl Grundstrom might be likely to play in game one versus Edmonton tonight. So that is your games. Those are your series. Raven, did we have we had an F1 race this week, right?
We did.
It was in China?
It was in China, yes, Shanghai.
What time was that one at?
2 a.m.
2 a.m., right?
So, yeah, I slept for 3 hours on Sunday night and then woke up and there was another race for the WEC in Imola at 6 a.m. And we watched like half of that before I went out to my girlfriend's brunch, so.
Very fun.
Yeah.
Very fun, man. Cool. So that is your games. Go watch On the Gravel if you haven't already. It is on YouTube. It is wherever you get your pods, whatever pod catcher you use. If you're on YouTube, give them a thumbs up, leave a comment, hit the subscribe button. If you are on an audio form of this or any of our other shows, you know, leave 5 stars, leave a review. If you're on Apple, do whatever you can. Share it around. Spread the love. We really appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the hockey tonight. It should be excellent. We will be back tomorrow morning to recap it all. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.